Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Charity Digital podcast. We hope you're having a great day. My name is Nick Wire, and I'm the Growth Marketing Executive here at Charity Digital, and I shall be your host for today's podcast. Now, some of you will be thinking, how is a marketing guy hosting a podcast on how to provide brilliant customer service? But fear not, I've had my hand in this cookie jar before, and I've seen firsthand what happens to an organization that has poor customer service. There's no loyalty, no respect, and we don't want that now, do we? But customer service is so much more than that for charities. Having high quality customer service makes sure the service users are well cared for and feel valued. And this in turn leads to more word of mouth recommendations. And from all of this, it helps you understand your users better too. So always remember, you could be the best in the world at what your charity does, but if your customer service is unreliable, unhelpful, or just a damn pain, you're not really gonna get anywhere, are you? But enough of the negativity, positivity moving forward. This delightful group of charity digital extraordinaires is here to help. We're going to go through the basics of setting up a great customer service team, the things to avoid, the challenges you may face along the way, with some tips and tricks to make you brilliant at it along the way. I'm joined by the head-banging rock star that is Joel Hogan, our customer service expert, our kind of Irish fearless customer service leader, that's Alice Roach, and a lady who has also had her hand in the customer service cookie jar, Lisa Rowland. Damn, those cookies are so sweet. Hello, everyone. How are we doing?
Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Hi, Nick.
So I think I'll start with at the top here, really, which is what does a perfect customer service team look like? And we'll ask the leader first. So Alice, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, of course. So as Nick mentioned, I run our customer service department here at Charity Digital. So I have some experience working and managing customer service teams. And definitely there are lots of ingredients to make the sort of perfect customer service team. And I think that one is having empathy, making sure that you can be kind and you can be empathetic to somebody's problem. I think that that goes a long way. You can train people to be technical and good technically, but you can't actually train people to just be empathetic and be kind to customers. So I definitely think that that's super important and not to be overlooked.
Yes, that's a good point. Empathy is definitely a key thing that I think a lot of people miss out. And I've definitely had a struggle being empathetic on some of the customer service I've done in the past. Joel, you're the expert here now next. So what do you think the best team looks like?
Well, so great few points there from Alice. I think I'm going to add the word patience to that one. Another one of those skills which may not necessarily appear on the job ad. And good customer service, you're always going to find a great mix of people on the phone, different skill levels, different languages, all that kind of thing. And sometimes, you know, they might be able to push your own patience, and you've just got to show it that you can talk to them, you can mirror the customer, as an old classic one that I was always been trained, mirror them. If they're quite casual in the way they speak, then maybe you might want to match that a little bit, maybe not too much. But if they are struggling, you know, you've got to be patient. And again, what Alice said there, to show empathy during that patient time with them.
So empathy and patience, they're the two key words so far. What's your word, Lisa? Give us another.
Hello, everyone. I think the main word for me would be communication. And I think this goes for multiple methods of communication as well, to being inclusive for everybody. So, for example, that might look like having a method for people that don't have mobile phones or the internet to be able to contact you. And again, I completely agree with Alice in regards to service knowledge and product knowledge. I think that's really important that everybody is trained up well on what you're offering. And if they don't know, that they're able to direct you to somebody that does.
Perfect. So we got four words there now. I think what was that? Empathetic, patient, good, well, four skills. Good communication skills and then knowledge. I like that. So are there any other key skills that you think you can bring to a customer service team?
I think that being open to change is really important in a customer service team, because customer service is constantly evolving and it's progressed so much more from your classic phone and email as that being the only way of providing customer service. As Lisa touched on, I think that's a really nice point about being accessible. We're moving into an era, or have moved into an era, where many customer service teams are providing support over WhatsApp. I don't know if you're aware of that. Messenger, you know, live chat, video calls, many, many different platforms and channels of communication. So I think if you are someone working in the customer service sector, you need to make sure that you're open to change and that you're going to get on board and move forward with that change.
I'd absolutely agree with that, actually. Definitely. Because if you're not adapting and going with the change, then you're just going stale. And that doesn't do any good for the customers that you speak to on the front line, but also yourself on a personal basis, on a mental level as well, allowing yourself to go stale in your job role affects both yourself and your team members as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think another thing I remember from my customer service days is sometimes the ability to have like quite thick skin, because you have to deal with sometimes some very difficult situations. And if you could detach yourself emotionally from a lot of these situations, it really helps in a lot of them. Hopefully everything's positive, but of course, if you work in customer service, some things aren't going to be as good. So I think
you have to have a thick skin. I once managed a woman that honestly once a day was going into the bathroom to cry. And I just had to be like, is this role for you? And you know, she was never like subjected to any kind of abuse. I would never allow like my team to go through anything. I'm very protective of them, but equally you are going to have people still be tricky and maybe not be as pleasant.
I think there's a lot of that in the customer service world, and I think you just have to learn to sort of detach yourself emotionally from the situation, almost create a persona for yourself when dealing with customers that's not you, and then it makes it quite a lot easier. And while we're kind of on that level of dealing with difficult things, let's flip that question around and sort of ask, what does a bad customer service team look like? I know that we've probably all dealt with them multiple times across our lives. I know I sat on the phone for 45 minutes the other day trying to contact Virgin. That was fun. But what do you guys feel about what makes a bad team? What should they not be doing?
I'm going to say, it kind of links to what Alice said earlier about change, but you have to, the people within the customer service team, like, they have to avoid laziness. What I found in working in various roles in customer service over the years is that people tend to get to a certain point with their training, and then they just kind of go into autopilot. And that kind of shows in their work, where they aren't going that extra mile for the customer, not prioritizing them, you know, not showing that same dedication to their work, that it's that laziness comes out to them. And also it's also spread out to the team as well, I think, as well. Because people, I find a customer service team can be quite reflective of each other as well. They can take on, but we're spending so much time with each other, they can end up taking on some of the traits of their members. And that can work for them, but also against as well, with sort of attributes like laziness.
Yeah. The laziness is definitely one I've felt in the past many, many times with customer service. I remember dealing with somebody who four people in a row didn't do what they told me they had done. And then the person after them would tell me that that person hadn't. And I was like, wow, this is brilliant. I think that's to do with sometimes bad culture within a customer service team. What have you seen, Alice, in your leadership days of leading these people? What makes a bad customer service team?
I definitely think not taking accountability, not taking ownership of the problem, not wanting to say sorry. I've come across people that just, they associate saying sorry as you're then responsible for the problem, and, oh, well, it's not our fault. And I've always said, as Joel will know, I've always said, you know, sorry goes a long way, even if it's not directly your fault. Just empathizing, again, bringing it back to the empathy. Empathizing with the customer or the person that you're dealing with, and just saying, look, I know that that's really rubbish. I totally, you know, I'm apologizing that you've experienced that, actually goes a long way. But I definitely think that there are many elements to bad customer service. We've all received poor customer service. And I have an expression that I always refer to, which is, if you receive good customer service, you'll tell two people. If you receive bad customer service, you'll tell 10. So providing bad service means you can build a bad reputation really quickly for your brand or your company. Providing good service is more of a slow burner, but it's worse to build bad customer service. And you can do that through, you know, no human touch. So as much as it's brilliant AI and chatbots and moving forward, we've all experienced being on live chat and just wanting to talk to a human, and talking to a chatbot is super frustrating. And you're just typing human, human, human in the hopes that you do actually get through to someone. So I definitely think not having a human touch will lead lead to bad customer service, and just generally not being able to actually, speak to somebody on the phone, or, you know, have somebody actually answer you.
Yeah. I just want to go back to one thing you mentioned there, because I think it could be a good tip for a lot of charities. But you mentioned the idea of saying sorry. And I think a situation that comes up a lot in customer service is when the organization actually hasn't done anything wrong, but they're sort of being pushed as if they have. How would you deal with a situation like that? Because I think that's something that's a really good tip for other charities.
I mean, like I said, people think saying sorry means that we're to blame and that we're taking accountability. I don't view it as that. I treat the same in my personal life. You should apologize for how someone feels rather than necessarily apologizing and being the person to blame for the problem. Just acknowledging how they feel and having that human to human acknowledgement of their feelings is really pivotal. And actually I've turned some like shouting, frustrated people around, really, you know, turned their frown upside down. Because I've managed to just break through their upset and their frustration by just being really human and being like, I get it. That sounds really frustrating. I'm really sorry about that. And just listening. I think that's also really key as well.
I agree. I've actually had a recent example of that where I've been speaking to someone who they were, I'm going to say, the creator of their own demise with their recent query, as they are the ones who created the problems. And instead of pointing them out, I would rather empathize with them, and I understood what effects, or try to sort of relate to what effects that something went wrong with them had. Like Alice said, like, I apologize, but I wasn't saying sorry because we weren't to blame. I was sorry that they had sort of a bad effect for it going wrong. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's always a very tricky one. I've dealt with that a few times in my past where people weren't reading specific things or hadn't really done their research into what they were dealing with, and then sort of tried to turn it around. And it's a really sticky situation. And you're right, it's sort of apologizing, but sort of pushing forward what's the next steps as positively as possible. Lisa, and the sort of customer service teams you've worked in the past, what have been sort of the bad features or the bad aspects that they've had in those teams?
I'm going to go back to kind of flipping what I said about what makes a good customer service team. And I definitely think kind of that lack of knowledge is frustrating. I think we've all experienced it where you're told one thing, you go to that desk or something, and they tell you to go back to the place you've just come from. So I think just things like that can really frustrate people. Time is quite precious, and people want to be, they want their query managed in, you know, a time efficient way. So as an event manager, I'm pretty process driven anyway. So I think having processes in place, you know, of key things to follow for customer service teams is really important. And so that everybody in the team is on the same page as well. So just making sure that everything's joined up, and that not only is the communication available there for your service users or your product users, but actually within the team, the communication is really strong as well. And I just want to touch on something that Alice said about communication and kind of having different communication methods to ensure inclusivity, but also making it really easy for people to find how to communicate with you, I think is key. And I've often gone on a website and I'm trying to find a phone number for a company, but they don't have one. But then you're 100th in the queue for a chat, for the live chat. And, you know, it could be a really simple question that you have. And I think just making it really easy that people know what method to use as well of communication to get their query dealt with quickly is really key.
I just wanted to go back to what you said earlier, Lisa, about getting the processes right, which you're so correct. I just want to acknowledge that I think it can be frustrating when your processes actually go outside of your, let's say, ecosystem, when perhaps you're dealing with external organizations or people who are in your processes. And I think it's key that if you do have that kind of setup, that you manage that process correctly by informing your customers or your users about your time frames and what you're doing, and just be, again, communication again, isn't it? It's all communication and just having that open channel.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, I think that's definitely good. Communication is definitely one of the things that's between people to make that sure that everyone's on the know, because it's so easy. And it's so easy to spot, I think, when you speak to someone who clearly doesn't know and hasn't had that communication around the team or doesn't have the knowledge. It just comes off so quickly that you know you're talking to somebody who can't help you, and that's just going to break that level of trust. And I think sometimes that also leads into dealing with customer service teams, or I've been in teams also where it's clear there's no care there, so you don't trust them to actually do what you need them to do, because you can almost hear and feel through the service you're getting from them that they do not care. And I think sometimes it's difficult too, but I think it's showing that you do in some way is really important, because if you don't, that, like I said, it's just going to be a real lack of trust between you and the customer service team. I think, with things changing a lot over the last few years from COVID and people working from homes, the customer service sort of landscape has changed quite a lot. And I was just wanted to ask, what are the sort of unique challenges facing the charity customer service teams now?
I would definitely say funding. Having volunteers as the people answering the customer service queries in some cases in charities, that'll be one. But I think that it shouldn't be treated as different to any other business just because it's the charity sector. I think that customer service should still be treated with utmost importance, because loyalty to charities is essential. So that should be treated still with a real importance, but unfortunately it's not. But as well as sort of funding and having the resources, it's also the way the customer service is going and having money for electronic systems, ticketing systems, live chat, customer communication systems. They might not have that. So, tying that in as well with having less resource, you could then potentially be at risk for delivering bad customer service.
Yeah.
I just want to add to Alice's point about resources. And I think it's really key to kind of get your customer service in the first place spot on, so that if you are lacking on resources or, finding it difficult to answer all of the queries, you may not get them if your customer service is there and it's all available kind of on your website, for example. So I think a good example is if you've got a product that you're selling, that you have like how-to guides and everything that is needed to implement that product in that initial kind of welcome email or welcome pack that the customers get. So that actually you're then fielding any queries that may come afterwards. So actually you could probably focus a bit more on retaining customers or than actually helping them with any queries that they may contact customer service about. So like I say, just making sure you've got all the resources available on your website or in help guides so that you can stop all of those queries coming in or unnecessary queries.
And also say, Nick, at the beginning of your question with the challenge of hybrid working, a big part of it is visibility now and a little bit of trust dashed into that as well. So obviously we're working in hybrid scenarios. From the customer service perspective in the team, you want to have that trust to know that everyone is still performing to the same levels whilst they are maybe sitting in their pajamas or something whilst working from home. But also as well, there's other lack of visibility as well. Like, for example, if you're using a different internet connection to, say, within the office, which means that could sort of tag some security concerns, like you won't have the same level of protection that your IT person or company might have set up on your internet connection in an office. So you just want to make sure that things like your net connection are set up or at least agreed with your IT person from working at home. It's really that lack of visibility or loss, should I say, not fully lost, can really have a bit, has really had a big effect in the past couple of years.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, actually, because in customer service, you're going to be so regularly dealing with very sensitive information, and cybersecurity suddenly becomes a risk as soon as we're in the home as well. And I was, one thing I kind of thinking about this is, we, as you just mentioned, Joel, and I mentioned at the beginning, we have a lot of people hybrid working. How would you guys tackle the idea of communication between teams? Because I think we all agree that that was a key skill for a good customer service team. But with people sort of working from home, how do you keep that communication between the members of the customer service team strong?
Yeah, good question, Nick. That is definitely something that we all experienced facing in the pandemic. I think something that I'm particularly proud of implementing at Charity Digital, and something that I hope provides great benefit, and Joel will be able to confirm, is implementing a knowledge base software, which meant that when we were having to onboard people in a hybrid model, which is super tricky when the majority of the week you're working from home, we had a knowledge base that was up to date with all of our processes, everything that we offer, basically every answer that they might ever need. So that was really important for me when I first came in to the role, because I just thought that it leaves us at risk if we don't know how to do one another's jobs, especially with the pandemic and seeing people go off sick. We need to be able to support one another. So that was something I was really proud of. But of course, as well, you know, keeping the communication really strong on something like Microsoft Teams, or, you know, having regular Zoom meetings. And of course, always trying to do in-person team meetings where you can as well.
So firstly, I can confirm Alice. just to echo your thoughts about the internal system that you implemented, I think the important task that you did was to extract legacy information, I'm going to call it, from long-time staff members who have just had their processes in their heads for months and years, and then getting them into an area or a portal or something like that where that knowledge could be shared easily. That's been great for us, and I definitely sort of encourage that kind of thinking for other organisations as well.
To add to that, kind of talked about the team there, but for customers, having a log of those conversations that you have with customers as well. So it's much easier, isn't it, when you're in the office to shout over to someone and say, oh, did you speak to this person, and kind of get an update there and then. But it's a lot harder when you're working remotely. So having a kind of a CRM system where you log all of your conversations with customers as well, so it's really easy then for other team members to look back on that conversation and be able to pick that conversation up from where a colleague may have left it. So having that process in place, I think, super important.
Just to bounce off that, Lisa, I actually think that the customers themselves should have implement something similar from their end. Mm. One thing I encourage for organisations or users who might be dealing with perhaps larger companies which have maybe extended customer service journeys is that I know a lot of people like to go and pick up the phone sometimes, but I feel they can be lost in translation. They can be bounced from pillar to post. But I always find if you can raise like an email or a service request, any of that kind of thing, from the customer's end, they can have written communication of how they've been handled and dealt, and have it for their own records too.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that's definitely something that's affected me in the past, was that I sometimes would hand off some of my customer service duties to somebody else when I was working in one of these particular roles. And it would be very difficult sometimes to really see a log of what had come before that. And it was processes that we kind of had to put in place. So I think that's a really good point. So we've kind of touched on a few of these things, but about the changes that have come in the customer service team over the last few years. But looking towards the future, are there any sort of key challenges you think they're going to start confronting the customer service teams? This could be things that you've already mentioned, like chatbots and AI and VR and such. But what things do you think are going to be most impactful?
What I think in the future is actually kind of here now, actually, if I'm maybe cheating this question. But because there's so many great ways of communicating with a customer service now, it's not just picking up a phone, but you've got email chats, you've got live chat as well. I think the challenge from the internal side of things is how you manage all those various forms of communication. Some organizations may be larger where they can split their the customer service members into different places. So maybe some might handle phones and emails, and another team might handle live chat or something like that. Or some with maybe smaller organizations or smaller customer service teams have to have a great skill set of how to juggle and bounce and jump between those various forms of communication and still retain the quality at the same time.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. What do you think, Alice, is going to really sort of hit the customer service sector over the next few years?
I think the correct tooling and software will definitely be a challenge to get right. Certainly something I'm currently being faced with. It's a challenge that I'm currently being faced with in Charity Digital. So we are currently trialing a couple of different systems at the moment with different functionality, but will basically be like an email ticketing system, which will maybe have live chat built into it. But there is so much more in the market now than there was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago in my role. So with that, there's almost too much choice, which I think kind of speaks to the world that we're living in now. There's just so much choice, whether that's on Netflix or Prime, you know, when you're watching TV, you're just absolutely saturated with information. So that will definitely be something that will be tricky to get right, because it can be an expensive and costly mistake to make if you get that wrong. Tooling and software for customer service is costly anyway. And it should not hinder you. It should actually ease processes and make it better for the customer, but actually a lot of software and technology doesn't. Like I said earlier, many places think having a chatbot is great, but I'm not really a fan of chatbots because I just do really like, maybe it's the old school in me, but I really like that human element when you're talking customer service. I just think you can't beat speaking to a human. But there's a lot of research to prove otherwise. So I think it's about getting it right for your own business model and your own brand. But that will be something that will continue to be a challenge, software and technology.
Yeah, I totally agree with you in the chat box. It's one of those things I think is exciting tech. I think is one of those things that a lot of people get very excited about and implement because it's new and exciting, but actually its effects are not brilliant. I've had so many chatbots which are essentially just a precursor to talking to somebody on the phone, and I'm like, why did I do that? That was a total waste of my time. And it really winds me up. But then I have said some where they've been implemented quite well and they have the sort of features so it can read through your account and see what's happened and give you more information. But I think it takes the time to really look at that technology and see if you can use it correctly rather than just to sort of make your life slightly easier, but your customers or users more life a little bit harder. Do you have any sort of anything you think we're going to confront the customer service teams in the future, Lisa?
I completely agree with Alice, actually, but the choice of technologies and systems is so vast now that it's going to be really hard to find the products or product that works for your company. So I think that's definitely going to be a challenge and something that charities will definitely need to spend time thinking about. So don't just adopt a system because everybody else is using it. I think it's super important that you choose the right software and the right systems for your charity and what works for you. And that might be one or that might be a few, but just because others are using multiple doesn't mean that necessarily is for you. So yeah, I back Alice on that one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in all aspects of life, that choice is getting a little bit annoying, if anything, really. I thought I'd just do a sort of, before we wrap up, a quick, just for a fun question. Is there anyone has any of their great tips or tricks that they think they could give to anybody who's just starting out in the customer service world? What would those tips and tricks be? I'll start with, let's go with Joel. Joel.
For the question, is that like dealing externally or internally?
Anything that if someone asked you, I'm starting out in the customer service world, what should they know?
well, that's one, Alice. My tip would be pull your punches and just say, try and make things work when you're asked to do it. And if you're, you know, so you can save your punches. By punches, I mean saying no to something. Just try and save them, because otherwise if you keep saying no to everything, it's not going to look good on your career or your team. Just try and make things work and say, yes, let's see how we can make this idea work.
Yeah, good one. Alice, do you have one to add?
I would say to anyone starting out in a customer service world, you have to like people. If you don't, then just stop it. It's like teachers that hate their students, and you just think, why did you ever become a teacher? And I love people. I get my energy from people. And I loved working in customer service. I'm actually sad that I don't get to anymore. Joel will back me up there that I was really pleased recently when we were under-resourced to actually jump in and do some frontline support, because I haven't done it for years and I thrive off talking to customers. But you have to love it to be good at it as well, because you have to roll with whatever comes, the good, the bad, the ugly. You know, I've been on calls for 45 minutes, an hour and a half, like coaching someone through something. So you have to have patience and you have to really enjoy that and get a kick out of helping someone. I think you have to have, yeah, you have to have that in you.
I can vouch for Alice on that, by the way. When she got a chance to do that, she was like a kid in a sweet shop having a go. Like, she was absolutely loving it.
It was so fun.
Oh, bless. Lisa, any tips and tricks from you?
I think mine's pretty simple, to be honest. I think be as friendly as personable as you can be. I think it just makes the whole experience a lot better. If you can kind of relate to somebody and, you know, ending the call, have a good day, that kind of thing. It's just nice, especially if you've been on hold for 30 minutes and you finally got through to somebody. It's nice to be greeted in a very friendly manner on the other end. So I think that kind of relates to Alice's point as well. But I think that would be my thing and what I like most about customer service.
Yeah, some good tips. I think the only one I could really bring in, this obviously doesn't apply to all situations, but I saw a lot of success in customer service. Sometimes there's a check-in with particular people just to see that they've got whatever the last conversation you had has worked, has gone a long way in really helping those people. So sometimes just taking a moment to send another email to say, hey, is everything okay with this and how you're doing? And just really taking the time to go that extra mile to support people has had such a positive experience for me and really helped people along the way. But I think that's all we've got time for. So thank you so much, everybody, for being part of this podcast. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a lovely day.